Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Herds of deer roam neighborhoods looking for food. They leave behind damaged plants and angry gardeners. Is there such a thing as deer-proof plants? Or what about even deer-resistant? Well, you're going to find that the answers are yes and no. Sandy Farber is a horticulturist with the University of District of Columbia's Cooperative Extension Service. And we're going to discuss plants that deer don't like, we hope, and ways to keep deer out of your garden. I mean, that's a big undertaking, Sandy. Welcome to Of Consuming Interest. Let me tell you something. Deer roam my neighborhood. And as I told you before we started this program, that I redid my yard last fall. So, consequently, I've been looking at my plants to see what the deer are doing. And I've had some very interesting things happen. But before we talk about that, let's just talk about generally, what can we do? Let's suppose we're getting ready to go. It's springtime. You're thinking about putting plants in the ground. What do you do? What do you consider? Because you've got all those deer and you don't have a fence.
You can first start thinking about planting plants that are more resistant to deer damage.
Okay.
And you can also think about placing repellents as well.
All right. Then
we're going to further talk about is implementing fencing.
All right. Well, that makes sense to me. Now, I started doing a lot of research, and I found that there was varying information on the internet. And since I'm addicted to the internet, I was out there all over the place. I must have spent hours. But, you know, for me, that was a labor of love. I enjoy doing it. So what I found one site that I thought was just about the best of all, and that was Rutgers University. They have a site, and if you just put in Rutgers and deer-resistant plants, it comes up, and it gives you a list, and they divide it into four categories. And everything I put down, put in my yard was A or B, which are the top and the middle level, except for one, which was a C. And guess what? The deer have been so happy eating that plant. But anyway, is that a good way to start by going out and figuring out what kind of plants you like? Go to a nursery. Would that be your first thing you'd say to somebody, or walk around the neighborhood and see what their neighbors have?
First of all, I want to clarify that when you look at deer-resistant and you Google deers and plants, stick with the websites that are .edu, not .com, because this is research-based information. And yes, Rutgers is a great place to look at their website because they are research-based.
That's a good point.
Here in this area, like University of Maryland has some great fact sheets on what with deer-tolerant, deer-resistant plants. Then I would go to the nursery, local nursery, and see what are your favorite plants and what color schemes, whether it's the foliage, the winter interest, berries, what you like to put in your yard. I would also, nurseries, the Cooperative Extension Services in Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. can provide you with a list of deer-resistant tolerant plants. And then I would go and speak with the nursery salesperson and purchase the plants. One of the top plants I think that I always sold when I worked at the nursery was ageratum.
Because I don't even know what that is.
Ageratum is like a periwinkle, low.
Oh, it's kind of a ground cover.
It's an annual.
Uh-huh.
And it's it stays flowering from when you put it in the ground in April, May, until the first frost in October. I tend to notice that the deer do not eat it.
Don't eat it, right. They don't need. There are some ground covers that they don't eat, even some evergreen ground covers. I tend to go towards evergreens, honestly, because I don't like annuals. They're pretty, but I don't want to have to plant them every year.
You're just like my sister.
Oh, my goodness. That's called laziness, I guess, or aching back or whatever. But I do tend to do perennials and evergreen. I prefer evergreen, even perennials that are evergreen. And there are.
Now, I've also been told by a horticulturist that I admire, is he told me that he plants all toxic plants. that they will not, they tend to stay away from toxic plants.
Right. Yeah, there are some plants that they tell you. I think winter daphne is one of those. Mm-hmm. And I think, what was it else? I think the skip laurel, which is a common, wonderful, durable, bright green, evergreen, very hardy. I think that that is kind of toxic to them, too. And then there are other things. I just don't know about them.
The one thing is, keep in mind, if the deer are hungry, they'll eat anything.
Yeah, that is so true. Now, in my yard, I noticed I planted some cherry laurel, autolucans, or whatever you want to call them. Lovely plants, beautiful green, evergreen, just really great. I have them in my backyard, which is fenced in, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But in the front, I put in some also. Well, dang, got it. My neighbor has them. The deer don't touch his. But because mine were new, guess what they did? Those pesky deer nibbled on my autolucans. They didn't do severe damage to them, but they did nibble on them. They're not as happy as they were. They're not as happy looking, let's put it that way. But that is typical, isn't it? You had said to me something before we started the program that new plants are much more likely to be nibbled on.
It's because they're tender.
Uh-huh.
They're not as tough as an established plant.
Mm-hmm.
They also tend to like, if you see in the winter, they don't go into the forest because there isn't any tender vegetation to eat.
Mm-hmm.
They stay on the outskirts. Now, there's one question that I always ask on my master gardening exam to my students. What is the understory plant that deer do not eat that is invasive in Rock Creek Park, which we wish that they would eat? Do you want to take a guess, Shirley?
Kudzu?
Well, they don't eat kudzu, but the thing that we wish we could get rid of is the barberry.
Oh, the barberry.
Barberry.
Oh, invasive. Oh, really?
Yes.
Yes, I know a lot of sites say they don't eat them at all because they're very unpleasant. But they're invading the
Rock Creek Park as an understory plant.
Oh, my goodness. Well, the kudzu is not really an understory, is it? Because it takes over trees and everything else. Can be really deadly to your garden. It's kind of scary. Well, I did not know that. But do you all put out lists of plants that are invasive that you don't want people to plant?
Yes,
we
do.
Because I know in some areas, it varies by area too, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
What else around here is we don't want to put in the ground? I don't want to put in
actually,
English
believe
ivy.
It or not, Nandina domestica is considered to be invasive now.
Really?
I know that it was probably the plant of the 80s, 90s, you know, red-winged euonymus is now considered to be invasive.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Now, I have Nandina, some old ones that have been in the ground in the backyard for probably 15 years, and they haven't spread or anything. But I put some in the front yard, which is not protected by a fence, and the deer have just mangled them. So I'm going to replace them. So, but do deer eat them in the wild?
That I don't know.
Okay.
If they're hungry, they'll eat anything.
Yeah. Well, they were eating mine, I'm telling you. Let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Sandy Farber. She's a horticulturist with the University of D.C.'s Cooperative Extension Service. And I know you're a lot more than that, Sandy. You teach. You have all kinds of master gardening classes. I'm not doing you great justice here in what I'm saying.
I have 226 active master gardeners in D.C.
Oh, my goodness. Now, tell me what that means. I love to garden. Maybe I ought to be a master gardener.
It's an 8-week intensive horticulture training where the Extension Service, we train them to go out into the field to answer questions, to teach plant clinics. I have a lot of beautification projects here in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
in all 8 wards. We cover schools, places of worship, nursing homes, parks and recreation.
Oh, that's awesome. So you're responsible for a lot of the pretty things that we see in our communities.
I guess I can take some
credit for that, right?
I can take credit for 9,000 hours annually that they give back to the city. And as far as an in-kind match to the city, it's about a quarter of a million.
Oh, that's awesome. That is really awesome. And you make everything so much nicer. I like my garden. I love plants. I think it's wonderful to see them growing, to go out in the springtime and see what's peeking through the ground and watch them as they change colors. And you know, no one should ever say that a garden is boring in the wintertime, because there are so many colors and leaves that change color, and junipers and cypresses that look different in the winter than they do in the summer. Can you tell that I love plants?
Yes, and you know, I don't know whether they're past their peak, but I love to go to Brookside Gardens in the winter.
Oh, see
the witch hazel collection it's in bloom.
Yes, I've read about witch hazel, and deer don't eat it, I believe.
That's correct.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's go back and talk a little bit about, now, let me just tell you, I found that they ate my nandinas. I'm going to replace the nandinas, the ones that are outside the fence. They ate an English laurel, which surprised me, because that's the same family as the skip laurel. They didn't touch the skip laurel, which were next to the nandina, did not touch them. My English laurel, they've probably eaten a foot off of it. And that's a pretty big, tough leafed plant. I was really surprised. Didn't touch my viburnums. They didn't touch the daphnes and things like that, or the spruces and the junipers, which I put a lot of those evergreen conifers, I guess you would call them. Is that right? So where else do you tell people to go in terms of looking at plants? Since I wanted stuff that was evergreen.
There are some nurseries that specialize in plants that deers won't eat.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You probably, I don't know any offhand.
Right, but you could find them.
You could find them. Mm-hmm. And they some of them do ship the plants.
Well, I think you have to do a little research, and you also, I think, I went around my neighborhood looking to see what was going on and what kind of plants were in my neighbor's yards that the deer were not eating. That's a great start.
You know,
but as I said, my neighbor has the cherry laurel that they don't touch, and they've eaten mine. Well, they haven't done damage, severe damage. They're one of those plants that they say that they're seldom severely damaged. Then the top level is rarely severely damaged. And that is the junipers and the spruces. They just don't eat those because, the needles, they're needly and prickly. They're not pleasant.
You know, the closer you get to your house, you put the stuff that, you know, maybe is just deer resistant, not deer.
Let me tell you, my darling, they came right up to the front door and ate tuber begonias that I put in a pot in the summertime. And I'm surprised they didn't ring the doorbell and ask for dessert.
Well,
I set those tuber begonias out there. I was expecting company. I put them out. Fortunately, I put them out the day that my company was coming. In 2 days, they were completely gone. How did they know they were there?
Scent.
Is that it? That's why they don't like herbs and things like that, some of the herbs.
That's correct.
Like catnip, thyme, rosemary.
But they love basil.
They love basil.
I guess it's the licorice taste of the basil is what they like.
Yeah.
You know, I always explain to people is there's the plants that are the chocolates that the animals love, whether it's the birds.
That they're always going to eat.
And then there's the dum-dums and smarties that they will eat last if they have to.
Right.
So, but, you know, one thing is I always tell people is hosta. If you have hosta in your yard and you have a deer problem, it's like the salad bar is open. Right. Come and help yourself.
Right. Well, when I first started, we first started having a problem with deer about, 15 years ago or so. And that was at the point where I wanted to put more plants in my backyard, which was had a lot of trees. But the trees had grown up and there was kind of bareness underneath the tree now. The tree canopy had gotten tall. And I wanted to fill it in with plants and all kinds of lovely things and trim, take out some of the trees. But I noticed that the hosta that I had out there, all of a sudden, I'm not seeing it anymore. It was being devoured by the deer. And it was nothing for us to drive home and see a deer about in the backyard nibbling on plants. I put out some azaleas. They ate those. They love azaleas. So we finally solved that problem by putting up what we call a deer mesh fence, which I'm sure you recommend this to your people that you deal with. It's a little very fine polyvinyl chloride, I guess. A mesh that you don't even see. I tell you, Sandy, you wouldn't even know it's there. You have to get up very close to even see it unless the sun's shining on it. It's so unobtrusive. I love it. And it has protected my backyard. So I have hostas that I had never seen before. That hosta came back. It's huge. I love it. I put out more hostas and all kinds of things like that. But I couldn't do that until I put up that deer fence.
I did not have as great success with one of my projects that I worked with, that which was a raised vegetable garden. Mm-hmm. It was actually at the old soldiers' home for a garden for the veterans. Sure. And we put up the mesh, and the deer came right in. And
how'd they get through it?
I don't know. Well, they're pretty smart.
I had mine constructed as though it were a regular fence. I had posts put in the ground, sunk in concrete. I had the mesh strung up, and we had wire, very strong wires to support it at the top and down at the bottom, because they'll crawl right under it if you don't have something down at the bottom. And this was attached with PVC wraps to the posts, and they did not get in. They've never gotten in. One time when I had a branch fall on it and I had to have it repaired, the deer did manage to jump over the fence, but that's the only time I've had a problem. I guess it depends on how you construct it. Did you all put it up, or did you just kind of wrap it around the plants?
We wrapped it around the plants. We didn't. Yeah. We didn't do it as an extensive job.
Well, it's expensive.
It gets expensive.
Exactly.
I have seen some of the organizations that we've worked with that they've used, you know, electric fencing, which is very expensive.
Yeah, let's take a pause here just to let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker, and my guest is Sandy Farber, and she, like me, loves plants, and we're talking about plants. She's a horticulturist with the University of D.C.'s Cooperative Extension Service, and we're talking about, you mentioned electric fences. I got very concerned about doing an electric fence. I just didn't like the idea of it. Do they really work? And are there some liability issues with that?
I'm not aware of the liability issues.
Right.
But the only thing that I am aware of is the only time that they may not work is in the winter when it's snow and it's cold.
I see.
You know, there are Brookside Gardens has an electric. I believe their fence is electric.
Is that right?
The fence also has to be 8 feet high.
Right. And now Montgomery County has gotten wise, and they have made their zoning. Now, I don't know about the other jurisdictions, so before you put in any fencing, you need to find out. But Montgomery County has special provisions for deer mesh fence that they allow it to be up to 8 feet, because I think their traditional fencing is like 6 or 6.5 feet.
And that's still not tall enough.
No, that's not nearly tall enough. It's got to be 8 feet. You're absolutely right. At least 7. Depends on if it's in an open space, the deer leap right over it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you have to consider. Okay, let's talk about repellents. I used, what did I use? I can't remember what I used, but I was fortunate, I found a battery-powered sprayer. Just a little thing, lightweight. Stick a couple batteries in it and pull a trigger and it sprays. I love it. But it didn't seem to protect my plants. And it was, you know, I put them in the fall and there was so much rain and so much snow, not snow, but rain. I couldn't keep up with it. And obviously the deer just waited till the rain came.
Unfortunately, the repellents get to be expensive over time because you have to keep on reapplying them every 7 to 14 days. And, of course, when it rains more, you have to keep on reapplying.
Right.
Now, one of the tricks that I've heard about and has worked is to take your old pantyhose, spray them with the repellent, and put it in the plants that you don't want the deer to eat.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Isn't that a great idea
that
for you, those old pantyhose
that
have
a great idea.
Runs in them?
It's going to look a little weird out there, Sandy. Put them on the ground, put them on the plant.
Or put them in the plant.
Put them in, just weave them in. Well, you can hide them.
Right.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It makes a conversation piece, Shirley.
Yeah, there you go. Look at Shirley's garden. Huh, isn't that funny? She threw out those old hoes. but you know, also they talk about putting out human hair, coyote urine, all kinds of different things. I guess the only thing that really works is to get plants that they really don't eat.
Well, one thing back... Let's go back to the repellents.
Okay.
I would suggest on switching the repellent every 7 to 14 days. Do not keep on using the same repellent. You have to keep on switching it because they get used to it.
They get used to it, yeah. And I read, too, that noise and lights, they get used to that. So
they get used to that.
Away. I figure if you light it up your garden, they're just showing them what to eat. I don't know. it is a problem. And, you know, while I'm sitting here joking about it, it was a serious concern to me when I started out trying to redo my front yard, which, it didn't look bad, but the plants had been there for 50 years. It was a 50-year-old house. They needed replacing, and it just looks so different now. But there are a few plants that I'm going to have to replace, and that would be the Nandina, unfortunately, and the English Laurel. And that's about it. I mean, the other things, they haven't eaten. So I've been very pleased about that. Mm-hmm. They did nibble the Autolucans, but not enough to make a difference. But the cypress and the spruce and the cedars, the junipers, they haven't touched them. And I know they've been hungry, and they've come up and sniffed because you can see the footprints in the dirt or the snow, depending on the season.
Do you notice on any young sapling trees that there's been any browsing? That what they do is they'll rub their antlers against the bark to rub the velvet off of their antlers.
I don't have any young trees in my yard. I have a huge maple tree, and that's it. I don't have any young trees.
That's another thing is to put some of the wire fencing around the tree, because it will kill the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Or you'll end up developing a tree that has structural issues.
Oh, wow.
And then it becomes a bigger problem in years down the road.
Right.
Where you have a tree that has structural failure.
Right, right. Are you an avid gardener?
Yes. I have plenty of projects in D.C. that keep me busy.
So you take out some of your energy and enthusiasm.
I'm on the board of directors where I live, and I'm the chair of the landscape and grounds.
I wonder why that is.
I wonder why, too.
Well, it's such fun to talk to you, Sandy, because it is a passion of mine. And I really, I welcome our listeners. If you want to send me an email, shirley@callforaction.org, and ask me any questions about the plants I've done. We put in, I think, 21 different types of plants in the front yard, and only two types, the Nandina and the English Laurel, have suffered enough deer damage that they have to be taken out. And I think that's kind of victorious, especially through the winter that we've just had.
Can you roughly tell me the dollar amount of damage that was done to your...
Oh, very little, because I only had three Nandinas and one English Laurel. So, no, out of those 21 varieties of plants, I think we put in 100 and some plants. I like variety. And, you know, there's one plant that I don't know that people know about, and that's the Lecothaway. Mm-hmm. I adore that plant. It is so pretty. The deer don't touch it. It is. I have some that are creamy with pink and all kinds of lovely colors. It's just lovely. There's so many things out there that are so pretty. Sandy, how can people get in touch with you? What is the website if they want to go get information from the Extension Service? Would it just go to the University of D.C.?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you can do a search.
My email address is sfarber@udc.edu. And can also be reached at 202-274-7166.
That's 202-274-7166 if you want to get in touch or ask her questions. And she is with the University of the District of Columbia's Cooperative Extension Service. And I love what you're doing in terms of making our community more beautiful, teaching people to be gardeners at the same time, and instilling a passion in them for what's green and glorious and beautiful and growing in our city. Again, it is the University of the District of Columbia's Cooperative Extension Service, and Sandy's number is 202-274-7166. If you want to ask me about what I've done, you can reach me by email, shirley@callforaction.org. And that's very simple. Sandy, I can't tell you what a treat it's been to have you on the show, and I hope we'll do something again, and I'll report to you on my plants and how they're doing. But at any rate, thank you so much for being with us. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I hope you'll come back and join us. And I'm Shirley Rooker, and we thank you for being with us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.